The following is a lecture entitled Journey to the Inner Self, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari, recorded on June 23, 2015, at Urban Yoga Center in Melbourne, Australia.
So, to take off on a wonderful, auspicious, transcendental mantra vibration, I'm going to have you all join me in chanting this mantra. You can repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So, there is a very, very ancient wisdom. It is called Bhagavad Gita. It is the most ancient wisdom of the self-realization science. And there's a very nice verses. I just wanted to read the English translation, and we will discuss this incredible information that helps us, that empowers us to make that journey to the inner self. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self, that's with a capital S. To see the self, the pure mind, or by the pure mind, and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses, established thus. One never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So, there is a science. It's not a whimsical shot in the dark. There is a science of how you can make that journey to the inner self. In other words, you have your outer self and you have your inner self. The outer self is in the realm called sukha dukkha, happiness and distress, up and down. Hot and cold, sickness and health, poverty and wealth, dualities, the external self. The external self is actually a covering, it is not the actual self. So when one makes that journey to the inner self, there's no greater journey, nothing more wonderful, nothing more thrilling, nothing more exciting, nothing more valuable, nothing more stupendous than to actually make that journey to the inner self, to realize your identity beyond the material nature. This is an ancient science which goes back thousands and thousands of years, indeed to the very beginning of the universe, and beyond that. This science works. That's how you can know it's true. Because when you apply it, you actually make that journey, you actually experience the transition from external consciousness to internal consciousness. You live in a new dimension. It's not that you become a spaced out are, we used to say, a space cadet in your everyday dealings. You can't hold a job, you can't have a relationship. No. When your internal self is activated, your external self becomes empowered. Just to facilitate our journey, we will do a little more chanting now. The thing that's really cool about chanting is it's enchanting. So we'll do some chanting of the famous Hare Krishna mantra. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we've come in for a safe landing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, I've been explaining this as a science. How is it a science, one can ask? I'm skeptical. Science means to know things as they are. Actually, it flashes me back to my days when I was in high school, Westbury High School in Houston, Texas, USA. The teacher said, "Students, H2O equals water. And we're going to go to the lab and you're going to prove it by your own experiment." So we did. Each one of us took two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen, and lo and behold, what did we have in our test tube? Water. It's real. H2O does equal water, you see. That's science. But you can actually prove it by an experiment, you see. There's a theory, and there's a fact. As far as I knew, H2O is a theory. H2O equals water is a theory. But when you go to the lab and you can actually do it, then you see it's a fact. So the science of how to make that journey to the inner self is also a science. Of course, it will remain a theory for you until you actually do it. And then when you do it, then it becomes science. So how did this young high school kid successfully produce water in the test tube? He followed the instructions in the lab manuals. Very simple thing. So this ancient wisdom actually is the ultimate lab manual of how to make that journey to the inner self. So by following this system, it's called Bhakti Yoga. There are many yoga systems. But it is described by a great personality, Yogeshvara, the master of all mystic yoga, who is the speaker of Gita. His name is Krishna. He says, Yoginam api sarvesham mangatena tadatmana shudavan vachate yo mam same yukta tamo mataha. Of all the yogis, there's hatha yogis, jnana yogis, ashtanga yogis, so many types of yogis. But if he says, of all the yogis, the one who has come to the highest level of self-realization is the one who has practiced the yoga of love. That's called bhakti. Or you can translate it into English, divine love, not ordinary love, but divine love. We all like to be loved, don't we? Everyone likes to be loved. Do you hate if somebody loves you? No, we all want to be loved. We crave love. It's what sustains us. You may lose everything else, but if somebody loves you, you have purpose and you have meaning in your existence. Someone loves you. So love is actually the highest thing. It's more valuable than anything else. So, to perfect the yoga of love is the perfection of yoga. So, what is that science then of perfecting this yoga of love? Some say that actually there's no substance to reality, it's just illusion. There's no personality, ability. Personality is false. Even some of the scientists say that actually we're just robots, we're not really people. You know, we're just a bunch of chemicals going through a reaction. We're not really people. But I don't buy it. That proves that I'm a person. Is it? Well, that I can disagree with the scientists when they tell me I'm just a robot. That proves that I'm a person. You see? Persons can disagree. That proves you have a personality. If you disagree with me, you've disproven my point. So therefore you can't defeat my argument. You can agree or disagree. Either way, you've proven the point that you're a person. So how is it that we have personalities? Is it, you know, all this, that all these chemicals somehow manifest personality at a certain point of evolution? No. Personality is primordial, it's there at the very beginning. That's the inner self, you see. The external self, the covering. But the internal self is a person. So, is it all one person, one could ask, or are there many persons? Well, it's obviously there's many persons here in this room. So, is there an ultimate person, you could ask? Some say, no, there is no ultimate person. There is no supreme person. There's no one who's superior or supreme. We're all equal. But is that really true? I mean, we can go around on how much money you have in your bank account, and we can see none of us have the same amount of money in our bank accounts. There's no equality even in this room. There's somebody who has more money, who has more power, who has more fame. There was a great sage, his name was Parashara Muni, and he devised a formula by which you could, a yardstick as it were, by which you could discern who is the Supreme Person. Because he analyzed all the opulences, all those things that are considered opulences in this world, power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, fame. These are the things that people hanker after, you see. You can be very powerful, just like the leader of a big army, you know, that's considered an opulence. You know, like Alexander the Great, you see, powerful military commander taking over the world, it's considered an opulence. Beauty, someone is just so gorgeously beautiful. As soon as you see that person, you just fall in love immediately. Oh, they're so beautiful. That's an opulence. Renunciation, someone who's very renounced, like Mother Teresa, you see, or Mahatma Gandhi. Somebody is very renounced from this worldly things and serving a higher cause. That's considered an opulence. Someone is very knowledgeable, like Einstein, you see, that's considered an opulence. Someone is very rich, like Bill Gates, that's considered an opulence. Someone is very famous, Paul McCartney, you see. These are opulences. So if there's a person somewhere, this is what the great sage Parashara Muni discerned. If there's a person somewhere who has unlimited power, unlimited beauty, unlimited renunciation, unlimited knowledge, unlimited wealth, and unlimited fame, that he exceeds everyone else in possessing these opulences. Whoever has the most of these opulences out of all the personalities in all of existence, in all the personalities throughout all of history, that person who possesses more of these opulences than anyone else, that would be the Supreme Person. So, if one analyzes all the great personalities in history in terms of this particular yardstick, then there's a person named Krishna who was on this planet 5,000 years ago, actually wins the competition. Who's the Supreme Person? But even laying that argument aside, look at it from a different angle. A gold mine must necessarily possess gold, otherwise it's not a gold mine. If there's a gold mine that produces unlimited quantities of gold, you can understand the gold mine must have a lot of gold in it. So then consider an existential mine from which all personalities are coming. You see? That existential mind, therefore, must possess personality. So that's another way of understanding it. That source of all existence. And existence must have a source. It can't be sourceless. You say, what's the proof for that? That sounds... Do I have to have faith in that? Or what is it? No, it's provable. Existence must have a source. Why? Because you can't get something out of nothing. Have you ever produced something out of nothing? Try making popcorn out of an empty pot. Can you do that? Anybody take an empty pot and get some popcorn out of it? I tried it one time. I couldn't do it. I was in Kuala Lumpur. I made an experiment. I took an empty pot. I put it and turned on the stove and went pop, pop, pop. Nothing came out. You see? So you can't get something out of nothing. Therefore, there's an original something, you see. There's an origin. So what is the nature of that origin? Go back to the analogy of the existential mind. That origin, which has produced so many personalities, must therefore possess personality. Therefore, we persons have some kind of relationship with that person who is our origin, just like in our external self, you see. We have a relationship with our father, our mother, because of them we've come, at least physically, we've come into being. Spiritually, that's another matter, but externally, we have come into being by the because of the mother and father. So we have a relationship with them. They have produced us in the external sense. So internally, there is also a production of us. And that is that existential mind, that source of all existence, which was discerned by the great sage Parashara Muni to be a specific person named Krishna. And Krishna himself states it clearly in the Gita. He says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. He made it very clear. So the yoga of love, the yoga of divine love, bhakti, means to reestablish a relationship with that person who is the origin of all existence. And now this person is unlimited because everything exists within him and he exists within everything. Therefore he has unlimited name, just like there's Jehovah, Allah, Christ, you see, Buddha, so many names for the Supreme. In fact, in the Sanskrit language, there's a book called Vishnu Sahasranam, The Thousand Names of Vishnu. And that's only the tip of the iceberg, you see. There's millions and billions of names, unlimited. It's infinite number of names for that Supreme Person. That Supreme Person is actually emanating you from himself for the purpose of having a loving relationship with you. And you may say, what is this he stuff? This sounds like, old fat. No, the feminine aspect is also there. But just like it is said, Radha Krishna. Radha is the feminine aspect of the Supreme, and Krishna is the masculine aspect. Or we say Hare Krishna. See, Hare is the feminine. We first address the feminine aspect and then the masculine aspect. Hare Krishna. So, the journey to the inner self actually means to realize your personality that exists beyond your material body. Your material body comes into existence for some time. It grows from a little baby and gradually matures, and then it goes downhill, you see, old age, disease, and death. But you remain the same through all these changes. You're not changing. The self within, the inner self, is a timeless being. He's not affected, actually, by the changes of the body. So through the process of transcendental meditation, it's like we were chanting Hare Krishna mantra. Through the process of transcendental meditation, you can actually re-enter into your eternal identity. You have it now, but it's dormant within you. It's like you're a pauper, but somebody informed you your great-grandfather left a buried treasure worth $10 billion in your backyard, and here's the shovel. Wow, my days of poverty are over. $10 billion fortune buried in my backyard? Start digging. So the meditational process, the bhakti yoga system, is how to reconnect yourself with the unlimited assets of your eternal being. Can it be described intellectually? Sure. Is that enough to realize it? No. We give you the tools by which you can have your own personal realization. That is called the bona fide spiritual master. I was very fortunate to meet a bona fide spiritual master. previously I was interested in self-realization, but I thought self-realization was to annihilate the self. Actually, as a singer-songwriter, I had a song like that. One time I did a guest set in the old days of the hippie movement in San Francisco. I did a guest set there was a famous band called the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead. I did a guest set between the Airplane and the Dead. And I had a song called, "Hey, I'm So Unreal, I Don't Really Exist Alone." I thought self-realization was to annihilate the self, you see. That was my conception. "Hey, I'm so unreal, I really don't exist at all," like that. The crowd loved it. The hippies went wild on that one. But later on, I found out that annihilating the self is not really... That's a lower level realization. It's called Brahman realization. I found out there's higher levels of realization. The next one up on the self-realization scale is called Paramatma realization. And then you go a notch higher, the perfectional stage is called Bhagavan realization. So I found a master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who was coming on the highest level. This was the guru of George Harrison and many also, Bhaktivedanta Swami. So, I previously mentioned those six opulences: power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. That's the meaning of Bhagavan. Bhaga means opulences, and van means possessor. So Bhagavan means that one who possesses unlimited power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. That is Bhagavan. So when you can actually connect with Bhagavan through love, you see. Say, "Well, where is he? I mean, can I meet him?" Sure, you can. That's where the mantra comes in. The mantra is called Nama Avatar. If you know anything about Sanskrit, the avatar word, by the way, the movie was completely twisted the meaning of the word. It completely twisted it. An avatar is one who descends from the transcendental world. That's an avatar. Forget the movie. They don't know what they're talking about. Avatar is one who descends from the transcendental realm into this realm, you see. That's avatar. So, Bhagavan, or as Parashramuni delineated, Krishna, who's actually Bhagavan, that Supreme Person who is the origin of everything, very kindly descends in a form perceivable and directly experienceable by us, Nama Avatar. Nam means name. So, this Hare Krishna mantra, for example, there's many mantras, millions of them. This one is recommended as the most powerful mantra of all the mantras in the Vedic scriptures. But any bona fide mantra, like for example in Hare Krishna, Krishna or Bhagavan has personally come. These two syllables, Krishna, are fully that person. He is actually fully present. That person who contains everything within himself and who is within everything. He's within every atom. He's between every atom. You can't go anywhere but Krishna is not present. He's present in Melbourne. He's present in Sydney. Within every atom, he's present in New York. He's present in the moon. He's present in Saturn. He's present in Jupiter. Wherever you go, he's within your heart, he's within your fingernails. You can't escape Krishna. Everything exists within Krishna, and Krishna exists within everything. Do you understand? So, you say, "Well, this sounds all fine and dandy, but, you know, what's in it for me?" What's in it for you is when you actually connect with Krishna or Bhagavan, then you successfully make that journey to the inner self. that stupendously terrific journey to the self within. You have the whole world for you becomes transformed. When you look out at Melbourne, now it's a mystical experience, looking at Melbourne even, you see. The whole world becomes transformed. It can be a beautiful day or an ugly day, but it all becomes beautiful when you develop this transcendental vision. When you become situated in your inner self, everything becomes beautiful. You see the perfection, the underlying perfection of everything. And you develop extreme compassion to see a world population who's totally caught up on the external plane with practically no connection with the internal plane whatsoever. And then you want to do something about it. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. For 44 years I've been doing this. I laid aside a career as a singer-songwriter to be a teacher of this science, because I realized this would have the greatest impact. This would have the greatest impact on the world. To help those who are caught up in external consciousness to come back to the inner consciousness, the self within, which transcends death. The self within, the external self, old age, disease, and death, the internal self is transcendental. It exists eternally. The bodies come and go, but that self remains. And that self then, when fully awakened, is qualified to cross into another dimension where there's no birth, no death, no old age and disease. That is called, in Sanskrit, that's called Paravyoma, the spiritual sky. The self then becomes qualified to make that journey into the spiritual sky. So maybe there's some questions. I'd be happy to answer any questions that might be there. You can write them down, it's nice. I have a little deafness problem. So sometimes easier instead of you write it down, it makes it a little easier for me. But I can take questions also. Actually, inquiring is part of the process of making the inner journey. Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Tadvidi panipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnananas tatvadarshinah. He says, just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, render service unto him, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. When my master was alive on the planet, I took a lot of opportunities. I was usually at a distance, so I'd write him many letters with my questions, and he was very kindly, and even though he had thousands of disciples, he would personally answer me. So I know very much the value of inquiring from a self-realized teacher, how it really helps one to advance on the pathway. So here's the first question. Can I pursue my goals in life while practicing bhakti yoga? Absolutely. If you want to be, you want to become the prime minister or, a famous artist or whatever you want to do, you can do that and it's part of your bhakti yoga practice. Krishna says, yat karoshi yadashnasi yajdahosi dadasi yat yat tapashashi kontaya tat kadushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as Whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. If you will offer your goals to Krishna, you'll merge them into the bhakti yoga practice, it will be wonderful. It will be simply wonderful. Okay. Why do we feel fear of exploring our inner self? Because of so much propaganda denying the inner self in the modern day society. We're in a very materialistic society. There's one scientist, Rupert Sheldrake, who talks about the inner self. And he's very much looked down on by the scientific community. The mainstream scientific community really looks down on Dr. Sheldrake because he talks about the inner self, you see. So there's just this whole bias now to kill the whole concept of the inner self. Like Richard Dawkins, he says, we're just robots, you see. The scientists tell us there is no inner self, you're just a robot. There's nothing in there. It's just a robot. It's a machine. So because of this propaganda, we get a little scared. Well, maybe people think I'm a little kooky, you know. I think I'm a little strange. I'm thinking about the inner self. What are you, into a spiritual trip? I mean, what's wrong with you, you know? Aren't you happy in life? You're not having a good sex life? Or what's the problem? You see, they may think you're weird. But you know, the greatest leaders in the world history were always considered to be weird. If you want to be a great hero, you got to be considered to be weird. You just want to be a conformist, you're just going to be, that's all you'll be. It won't be a very significant person. But the most significant people in history all were considered very weird. So if you really want to step out and be somebody, be willing to be weird. It's actually cool to be weird. Don't be afraid of being weird. It's cool, man. Actually, in Austin, Texas, where I come from, they have a saying, keep Austin weird. So in Austin, you're supposed to be weird if you're really cool in Austin, if you're weird. So I fit right into Austin. I'm right at home in Austin. You mentioned in your talk that Krishna is present in every aspect, thing pervading in the universe. What aspect of Krishna is present in Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan? Krishna is fully manifested as Bhagavan. He's partially manifested as Paramatma and even less manifested as Brahman. He's present in all three aspects, but he's fully present as Bhagavan. Why is it so? Krishna is very kind that those who aren't ready to accept the personality, who really think, I just got to merge into some kind of impersonal oneness, Krishna says, it's okay. Brahmano pratishtaham, I am the source of that impersonal Brahman. For those people, okay, I'll give them the impersonal Brahman. It's like Buddhism, you know, merging in nirvana. Okay. For those people, I'll give them them. I'll let them have them. But you know, one cannot remain satisfied in Brahman. Because our nature is, we want relationships. Who wants to live in a world without love? Sometimes out of frustration, we think, okay, no more love affairs, no more relationships. I'm just going to go out in the forest. I can't handle people anymore. No, but you won't stay. You'll come back eventually. Because our nature is we want relationships. Even if someone can't get along with anybody, what do? They keep a dog. They have a relationship with the dog. They come home, the dog licks their face when they come home every day. You see, oh, my beloved Fido, he really loves me. You see? So everybody wants a relationship. So this Brahman realization, it's for those people who are so frustrated in relationships, they want to get out of it and merge into some kind of an impersonal oneness. They're given that facility for some time, but they come back down again. to material existence because it doesn't fully satisfy the self. Paramatma is it's for the yogis, the Ashtanga yogis, the strict Ashtanga yogis who take many, many lifetimes to raise the life airs within the body and be able to fully absorb themselves in meditation on the four-armed manifestation of the Supreme Person within their hearts. That is called Paramatma realization. They meditate on him, they don't have a loving relationship with him. So it doesn't eternally satisfy the self. It's a step higher than Brahman, but it's also not fully satisfying. The full satisfaction comes when you have a relationship with that Supreme. You mentioned that everything has a source, that is God or Krishna. But Krishna or God does not have any source. No, he does have a source. And this is described in the Brahma Samhita. Ramandi murti shakalani amena tishtam nana vataram akarod bhuvaneshu kintu Krishna svayam samavabhat paramapumanyo govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Krishna, the primeval Lord. Actually, the verse goes, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who manifested himself personally as Krishna. So, Govinda is under the name of Krishna. So, actually, Krishna's origin is Krishna. He's the origin of himself. He's self-manifested. So he also has an origin. And his origin is Krishna himself. So Krishna also has an origin. He comes out of himself. You say, well, but there must be some source besides Krishna that produces him. Yeah, if there was, that would be the original source, not Krishna. You understand?
How do we develop our spiritual body?
You don't have to develop your spiritual body. You already have it. It's just dormant right now. You just got to wake it up. You already have your spiritual body within you. It's been traveling with you through countless lifetimes in this material world. You already have it. Now you just got to wake it up. That's what the mantra is for. The mantra wakes it up.
What is that marking on your face?
That's called tilak. And it's the insignia of someone who is who has conquered death. It's the insignia of somebody who has conquered death. Or who wants to conquer death, either way. Many years ago, before I started just traveling and doing bhakti yoga seminars all over the world, I actually had a regular job working for MCI Corporation. It's a big gut. It was the original telecommunications company. There used to be a monopoly in the U.S. AT&T was the only telephone company. They had an absolute monopoly on telephone service. But MCI rose up to challenge them and became a big player in the telecommunications market. So I became a salesman for MCI Corporation, selling their telephone service over the telephone. And to get hired, I grew my hair out. I had a tie and, regular, look like a regular Joe. But, having lived in an ashram for so many years as a monk, I really was attached to my tilak, really attached to it. So one day I just said, the heck with it, I'm wearing tilak to work. I don't care what happens, I'm wearing tilak. And that day I was so fired up, I was closing sales, and my boss was going, wow. Because he gets a commission on my sales. My manager gets a commission. I get a commission, and he also gets a commission. So he was going, wow. At the end of the day, he said, "Mr. Bridge, I don't know what that is on your forehead, but from now on, you must wear it every day." So, what can I do? My boss, MCI boss, ordered me to wear it every day, and so here I am, still wearing it. No, it's powerful stuff. It really is. Yeah, there's actually shakti or spiritual potency in this marking. It actually wards off evil. I mean, it's very powerful. A very powerful thing. It's a protection. It's like a talisman. Very powerful thing. How did Krishna come into being? Krishna is eternally manifesting himself out of his desire to enjoy. Okay, let's see here. If Krishna is everything, and everything is Krishna, this love relation with the Supreme is not a relation with a natural universe. Let's see if I can understand the question. If Krishna is everything and everything is Krishna, this love relation with the Supreme is that word not? Is the word is not? Who wrote this? Is it is not?
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same as relationship with the natural universe. Okay. Okay. When you have a relationship with Krishna, you automatically have a perfect relationship with the universe. Automatically. Because everything is within Krishna, and everything Krishna is within everything. When you have a perfect relationship with him, you have a perfect relationship with your friends, your spouse, your relatives, your community, with all animals, with all plants. When you perfect your relationship with Krishna, then you have a perfect relationship with everything and everyone. Does that answer your question? Okay, good. Any other questions?
Yes. Can Krishna be with everyone at the same time when he's only one person?
Yes. How can Krishna, who's only one person, be with everybody at the same time? That's because he is called Yogeshvara. He is a master of unlimited mystic potencies. You can only be in one place. I can only be in one place. But Krishna, being the source, ultimate source of all the energy, has unlimited mystic powers. If there's anything he can do, he can be in millions of places at the same time doing different things in each place. In fact, he was witnessed. Krishna manifested himself on this planet 5,000 years ago in India. And he showed that he could do that. He married 16,108 queens. And during the day, he would go down to the assembly place. He was acting as a prince during the day to manage some kind of a royal function he did during the day as one Krishna. But at night, he would divide himself into 16,108 forms and go to each palace to be with each queen doing something differently. And each queen was thinking, wow, those other queens are really missing out. Krishna's coming to my palace every night. They were thinking that Krishna was only coming to their palace, as if they had Krishna all to themselves. So each one of the 16,108 queens is experiencing, wow, I am Krishna completely in myself. Every night he must love me the most because he comes to me every night. But every queen had that experience. So in the same way, Krishna will personally manifest himself for you, that Krishna is fully yours. When you become fully his, he becomes fully yours.
And so what relationship do we have? We choose one because any type of relationship is affection.
What is the question?
What kind of relationship do we choose with Krishna?
Oh, do we choose?
There are
I mean, what, when you become self-realized, what kind of relationship do you have like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, there are five different types of relationships that one can have with Krishna or God in the spiritual world. They are described by great self-realized devotees who actually entered into these different types of relationships. One is called neutrality, shanta ras. It means just like, you see this rug here, the peacock feathers on the rug? Krishna is very fond of peacock feathers, and he wears one in his hair. So that peacock feather is actually a person in the spiritual world. Someone serves Krishna as a peacock feather in his hair. That's called neutrality or shanta ras. There's another type of relation, or you can be a rock that Krishna sits on to take his lunch every day. Some people want to be in that relationship. They like to be a rock or a peacock feather. So they can have that if they want it. You get whatever you want, whatever you like. It's like going to the store and picking out whatever you want. You get to be whatever you want. So some want to be a servant of Krishna. That's called dasharas, the relationship of servitude. Some want to be a friend. Krishna has many cowherd boyfriends. They're just friends. They act as equals with each other. They go out and herd the cows and the calves together. They have all kinds of adventures, having picnics in the forest. They have great fun together. They're called the cowherd boys, Krishna and the cowherd boys. Some would like to be in a parental mood, to have Krishna as their son. That's called the Vatsalya Rasa. Or some want to be, like to be Krishna's girlfriend, like to have a conjugal relationship. You see, that's called Madhurya Rasa.
Sorry.
Huh?
That people only have one relationship, they can't change?
Actually, my Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he said, actually you can change your rasa.
I see.
You can switch. You can try one and see how you like it. If you don't like it, you can switch. There's full freedom.
How could you not like it,
though? Huh?
How could you not like the relationship?
How could you not like it? Actually, they don't. That it's very rare that anybody would switch, because whatever relationship someone adheres to, that's their thing, you see. Like we had that saying in the 60s, do your thing, you see. So everybody likes to do their thing, and this, whatever your thing is, whether it's being a rock or a peacock feather or a cowherd boy or a parent or a cowherd girl, everybody does what they like the most in the spiritual world. Everyone has the full freedom to relate with Krishna in that way which gives them the most excitement, the greatest nectar, the greatest bliss. Everyone simply goes for what they enjoy the most.
And regarding the lover relationship, is that only between a woman and Krishna?
What is it?
Loving relationship, is that only between a woman and Krishna?
The love is there in all the relationships. Krishna loves the calf also. The calf, the relationship he has with the calf is also a very intense love. Krishna has great affection for the calf. The calf cries tears of ecstasy when Krishna hugs him.
Maybe if I can ask a sexual relationship.
He meant conjugal relationship. Yeah.
In the spiritual world, they don't have any, what is it, they don't have any conjugal relationships, man-to-man relationship. They have conjugal relationship between male and female, but they don't have, men don't have conjugal relationships. But this level of loving relationship transcends any type of love you may have in this world, you see. It's like two gay men may feel an affection for you in this world, you see. But when you, the platform of Krishna consciousness is so far beyond that, it's a whole other dimension. You see what I'm saying? It's much deeper, it's much more intense, much more ecstatic, much more thrilling, much more, it's a whole other dimension. See what I'm saying? It's another dimension beyond what we might experience here. two men trying to have a, you know, a sexual relationship, a gay relationship. It goes far deeper and far beyond anything, any loving affection that can be felt here. First of all, they don't have sexual intercourse. Spiritual world, it's like, that's not part of the... But someone on that level, sexual intercourse is just some gross bodily function, like passing stool. It's not attractive anymore. That's such a higher level of consciousness. It's beyond any sort of sexual intercourse, stimulating the genitals. It's so far beyond any level of sexual intercourse. It's not even an issue in the spiritual world. There's no interest in them. It's boring for them. They're experiencing such a higher level. In the material world, you know, an orgasm or sexual intercourse is considered the greatest thrill, you see, by many. But the pleasure of Krishna consciousness, it's actually described in the ancient text called the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yan matunaiti grihamedi sukham mitu cham. In this material world, sex is considered number one, pleasure. But for those who have actually come to the transcendental platform, who have awakened the inner self, the Bhagavatam says, hitu cham, it is 10th class. You see? 10th class pleasure. Sex, that sex pleasure is 10th class pleasure. So, Krishna has a conjugal relationship, but the sex is not part of it because it's, on that level, it's some 10th class thing. It's something you just do for having kids. That's a, it's not of interest. The pleasure is so far beyond the sex pleasure of this world. It's inconceivable for us, actually. Because for us, sex is everything. It's confirmed by Freud, right? Sex is everything in this world. You see? But when you actually, that's the external self. But when you actually awaken the inner self, when you actually turn on your soul, then you experience a pleasure which makes sex pleasure completely, totally insignificant, a waste of time and energy. Maybe that helps a little bit. I mean, we can talk about it, but it may not make much sense to you. They may say, that sounds too far-fetched for me. But the thing is, if you actually experience it, if you actually come to that level where you're tasting a pleasure better than sex, actually, even here, just by the chanting, you don't have to go there. If you get deep enough into the Hare Krishna mantra, you'll experience a pleasure greater than sex. It's better than having sex. It's a matter of how deep you go, but it actually is better than sex. Hare Krishna is better than sex. Yeah.
How this long relation or this Krishna consciousness is different from the nirvana in the Buddhism?
Yes. Nirvana means to deny the self. The self is false. The only reality is void. In nirvana, there are no loving relationships because you don't exist, according to Buddhist philosophy. You don't exist. Nothing exists. The only reality is nothing, according to Buddhist philosophy. Nirvana. So that love does, there's no such thing as love in nirvana. It cannot exist because there's no persons to feel love or to give love. But in the Gita, Krishna also mentions the word nirvana. He says, paramam nirvanam, that supreme nirvana that abides in me. So there is the inferior nirvana, and there's the supreme nirvana, you see. This process, coming from the Gita, will take you to the supreme nirvana, beyond the Buddhistic nirvana. And there's another term elsewhere in the Vedic teachings, nirvana vilambitani, that which minimizes the value of Buddhistic nirvana, you see. So, you're interested in attaining nirvana, we'll take you there. We'll take you to the highest nirvana. Anything else? Well, tell you what, I'll do one of my songs here. I used to have a TV show. This is the theme song. Do you have a picture? Yeah. This is the theme song of my TV show called TurnOnYourSoul.com. Do you know who you really are? Do you know where you're coming from? Do you know for sure where you're going? Or what you will become? You're a temple full of knowledge and bliss. So remember and celebrate this. You're not of this world, dear friend. Better tune in and turn on your soul. Do you know what happens when you die? Do you know what's beyond the sky? Do you think that body is you? Is just something that you're passing through? You're eternal full of knowledge and bliss. So remember.
You just gotta turn it on and keep it turned on. Hare Krishna. I'm not.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I do have an e-course. If you liked my talk, you might want to tune in to my free e-course and get something every day in your email. You can pass it to anybody once an invitation to the e-course. So again, we thank you all very much. You're wonderful. We love you. We want to take you on that journey. So please come with us on the journey back to the inner self. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'd like to give another big round of applause. For the very inspiring talk and the chant and the song as well. Thank you very much for coming.
And my delight to be here. The high point of my visit to Melbourne.
I'll be very fortunate. We hope to have you here again, maybe during your next visit. So now dinner will be served at level 1.